You are what you eat, but in many Southland communities, access to high-quality organic produce is limited. We'll talk to a man who's on a mission to eradicate food inequity in black and brown neighborhoods, one front yard at a time.
I imagine LA having hundreds of these one day, and this entire network being a new option for people who want a job and a career in urban agriculture.
And do you check those food labels, Best Buy and Sell By dates, then toss them in the trash? You may be wasting food and your grocery dollars by tossing perfectly good products. We check in with an expert to expose the food labeling myths and the best ways to check to see if food has gone bad. Plus money-saving shopping tips, all the best ways to cut costs on your weekly grocery bill, and even earn some cash back. We've got food for thought. The Fox 11 News In-Depth starts right now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner. From time to time, we've talked about the growing problem of food insecurity for many here in Southern California. And today, we'll talk about that and more. There are a lot of organizations working to address the food deserts of South Los Angeles and other neighborhoods where the closest grocery store is miles away. But one man has come up with a way to get super nutritious organic produce into the community, creating jobs and profit for homeowners, and using a unique watering system, a water-saving technique. Jemiah Hargens, founder of Crop Swap LA, is here with us. He's going to talk a little bit about this micro-farming concept that he's been dealing with. First of all, let's define micro-farming. And how you doing? Thanks for being with us.
Great. I'm happy to be here, Hal, and nice to meet everyone. Micro-farming is a concept of creating food that wasn't in one place before and doing so in a way such that the entire system, whether it be composting, water usage, other resources, can be self-contained right there on the spot, including the sales of the food.
Now, the video we're looking at, describe that a little bit for us. What are we looking at?
Yeah, so that is the front yard of my wife's colleague who allowed us to put a land use agreement in place that let us install a micro farm on his front yard. This is a water recycling system. So when it waters onto itself and that black fabric down there, it rolls back down into a reservoir that we capture all the water again and again. So we end up only using about 9% of the water that we previously used to water the grass, but to create 600 plants that feed 50 families a week.
You're making me hungry. You know that. What is this organization that you have, and tell us about how that works.
Sure. So Crop Swap LA is a company. I own the company. We do have a fiscal sponsorship in play, but for the most part, we want to operate as a social enterprise where we sell the food, it creates a job for someone who lived nearby, and that food is greater in quality and nutrient density than other things available in our city. We think that there is an overall deficiency of nutrient-dense food in LA, and for me, starting the organization about 3 years ago and just launching this micro farm about 5 months ago, I've always been motivated by that as a parent, going around LA, knowing we have busy lives and food scarcity as it is, and understanding potential of catastrophes in the future. We think we should be a little bit more prepared than we are now. So this is a way to loop all of the available resources in and create value where there wasn't any.
How does this actually help the issue of, you know, food inequality and some of the issues people are facing who in Southern California, as hard as it is to believe, go hungry?
Yeah, it is a little unbelievable. I think I've always believed it's just a matter of proper organizing, proper alignment of resources and energies, proper partnerships, and being sure to share the food and wealth where it is being generated. That means those who are members of the Asante micro farm must live within 2 miles of that location in order to even qualify as a member. And we have available gift purchases, so if folks who aren't within that space could buy a membership for someone else who is. So we donate 10% of our food to a community refrigerator or organization nearby, and we've committed to hiring hyper locally, even thinking about giving discounts to members if they don't bring a car, if they walk or take a bike.
Well, that's interesting. So I guess one of the questions is this watering system, because, you know, we went through last couple of years a pretty bad drought, and then Governor Brown, back when he was governor, encouraged us to get rid of our watering systems and go to low flow water, and so many of us changed that out. Is what you're talking about kind of a low flow watering system?
It does integrate some of those mechanisms, such as a pressure regulator on each sprayer. But what it really does is it recaptures water that's used. So think about a gray water system, which is hooked up to your house and comes from your shower or your sink. That might go to your garden, but that's only two uses out of that water. In our system, because it captures almost all the water that is used to water the food, it actually uses that water hundreds of times over again, creating nutrient-rich liquid that when it lands on the leaves, it grows the plant about twice as fast as it normally would. So not only is it more efficient in terms of food growing capability, but it's also extremely efficient capturing water instead of allowing it to drain through. So we appreciate the farming efforts and gardening efforts that have gotten us this far. This is a number of techniques, both architectural, pond making, landscaping, and agricultural.
And I would guess at a time when we were experiencing drought that, you know, sustainability with regard to water is very important. Not overusing it, but reusing it is sort of the key to all of this. And you enlist homeowners. And how do they benefit from this?
That's right. So our first arrangement is at a 5% net revenue, where we are going to share 5% of the money that we make with the homeowners, so they feel bought in on it. But we also have the ability to apply for the turf removal programs, which saves a few thousand. And in truth, the real money savings for the homeowner is in no longer using water for your grass. Because like I mentioned earlier, we're only using 8% of the water previously used to water that grass. Their water bill extremely dropped the moment we started our construction. And that's where it ended up back in about 2 years.
You got $4 million recently. First, I'd like to ask you for a loan. But second of all, tell me where that $4 million came from. We got just under a minute.
Sure. Well, we're fortunate to have a strong relationship with Sydney Komlager, the state senator from our area here in L.A., District 30. And she put into the state bill for California $4 million for Crop Swap L.A. that we'll be receiving and using to expand these urban agricultural initiatives and hopefully to be a model for the rest of the state of California.
All right. Well, Jemiah Hargens, thanks so much. We're going to want to check back with you. We're going to want to see how you're doing. We're going to want to see how many micro farms you've gotten going. And it just sounds like a really interesting project. Thanks so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Of course, Hal. Thank you.
All right. Coming up on Fox 11 News in Depth, are you cleaning out your fridge based on those dates printed on the package? Well, those confusing Best Buy and Sell By dates, that can lead to massive food waste. What you need to know about food label myths right after the break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fox 11 News in Depth. I'm Hal Eisner. According to the FDA, between the food industry and consumers, Americans are throwing out about $161 billion worth of food each year. $161 billion. That represents about a third of all of our food. One of the biggest contributors to folks trashing food based on the date printed on the product, like the sell-by date, the best-by date, the use-by date. It can all get so confusing, right? And a lot of people would rather toss it than risk eating bad food. Tamar Adler is here. She describes herself as a food waste evangelist. And you can see her book there. It's called An Everlasting Meal. And Tamar, thanks for joining us. Good to see you. And I don't know, tell me about this whole issue of throwing away food. I mean, I've done it. We've all done it. But if it says a certain date, isn't that supposed to be a clue that they don't eat it past this date?
Unfortunately for all of us and for the planet, it's not. Those dates don't correlate with safety. And actually, they were never supposed to suggest anything about safety. The best by dates and sell by dates were originally put on products to help grocery stores with their stocking so that they would know what needed to be in the front, which is stuff that was, you know, more recent stuff would go behind. The older stuff would go in the front, and it was to serve them. It never had to do with when it was safe, but rather what should be sold first because of when it came into the store.
It's interesting because I think many of us have the perception that if it says do something by a certain date, that means by a certain date. And so it's interesting to hear this. So the FDA is trying to standardize this labeling. Is that right?
They might, but first of all, there is no federally mandated system for labeling now, which is just important to know. So all of those dates don't have to be on there. It's become industry practice, but there's no rule saying they have to be on a federal level. The FDA is considering standardizing them so that they would they would say this is when the food is best by, but that still means best by in terms of flavor and freshness. And it's mostly to help brands distinguish themselves. So for instance, if you compare a yogurt that you eat that, you know, has been sitting on a shelf for much longer with a yogurt that just got onto the shelf yesterday, that's not necessarily fair to the first brand of yogurt because you're comparing, you know, two entirely different things. But it doesn't mean that the one that's been there longer isn't safe to eat.
Yeah, but you're saying that they're thinking about doing it. It strikes me as, why wouldn't they want to do that? I mean, we label all kinds of things. We say this is bad for your health, this contains this, this does that. Why wouldn't they want to do that sort of thing?
Well, I think, first of all, even if it is, if there is a uniform system, it will still be voluntary on the part of food producers, because there is no federal mandate. And a lot of that is because there's no way of figuring out without opening up food and looking at it and smelling at it whether it's safe to eat. Things go bad at different rates. And I mean, take dairy as a perfect example, because pasteurized dairy will almost never go bad. Like, it takes a long, when it actually does, you know, start tasting funny or smelling funny, it won't be dangerous. It'll just be, you know, milk that until it's terrible, you could probably use for baking. And then after that, maybe you would want to compost.
All right, let's explore that a little bit more, because I know if you took some milk and it smelled sour, you'd know don't drink that. But how do we know what actually is bad, unhealthy, dangerous for us to consume?
That's a great question. I would say two things. First of all, most of the really dangerous pathogens are unfortunately not tasteable or smellable. So when you think about E. coli, for example, and the huge E. coli outbreaks that have injured people, paralyzed people, have been incredibly dangerous, those are not ones that were in food that had gone bad or in food that you could have observed anything about. Those are pathogens that very much have to do with food production and what was happening much earlier. And it's true that with industrial scale food production, you have much more of a chance of those really dangerous pathogens. With things like milk that is going sour, because it's been pasteurized, it won't hurt you, most likely, no matter what. It just might make you kind of want to, you know, gag if you taste it or smell it, which brings me to the wonderful, wonderful thing, which is that we have sense organs. We have these highly developed sense organs that are unbelievably complicated, unbelievably sensitive, and our bodies have been evolving for millions of years. And so if you think back to some time when you did taste something that was actually bad, or even the smell of milk, your whole body revolts, right? You know, no way. I will not be able to eat that.
I have two things I want to ask you real quick. Well, one is that you seem very passionate about all of this, and we're meeting for the first time, so we haven't got to know each other before. But where does this come from? This sort of passion about food.
For me, it's a culinary passion, I think, because I am a cook, and before I was a professional writer, I worked in food service. I was a line cook and a chef. And as you become a really practiced cook, you learn in so many cuisines in the world, it's just regular practice to use a food that is further along on its life cycle for a different preparation. So I can even, you know, give the specific example of bread, because I was a cook at Chez Panisse in Berkeley, and we regularly had this like clear schedule for bread came in that morning, and that was what you served in bread baskets. And then that stuff from the table obviously had to get composted, but then day old bread that had never gone to the table would get sliced and used for crostini. And then 3 day old bread would get turned into ribollita or bread sauce. And it was just, that's the same is true of, you know, Parmesan rinds, which are just like sitting around in the fridge. There's this kind of regular life cycle for ingredients that all cooks are very familiar with. Yeah. And then you come out into the regular world and people are throwing away stuff that in all of these great cuisines are, you know, vital ingredients.
And I guess a lot of this is for fruit too, the same sort of thing. All foods are very similar in that. let's remind people here. If we are throwing away things that maybe we're throwing away because we have a perception that something is bad because of something it says on the product, let's remind people under what conditions they probably should throw things away. And is it, am I to assume that the reason why we throw things away is because we just somehow decided that that means something? And so, and it was a mass thinking of some kind.
I mean, it's a really common cognitive bias. You know, it's a, if you think about it, if you're provided a piece of information and no other information, you assume that the piece of information that you're provided is the relevant one. It's the one you're supposed to use. So it's not, you know, it's not some like crazy drink the Kool-Aid thing. It's the only thing on there. And it literally says use by. Unfortunately, that it would be wonderful if there was different information, like pasteurized milk stays good for this many days from the date it goes on to the shelf. Also, even if it hasn't gone good, it's not going to hurt you. Right. You know. And the other thing is that as more and more food ends up really packaged, we don't even have information that we used to have when we could touch food and smell it. So like, if you think about, you know, the cognitive bias of using whatever information is there, we have that date, but we don't have necessarily the smell, being able to touch it. You know, our senses, natural reactions to the food are kind of missing when things are packaged in plastic. And so we have this one data point and it makes sense to use it. It's just not a great one.
Right. Tamar, really nice to meet you. Thanks for joining us. Good information. And I'm going to go home and look in my refrigerator and see all the things I shouldn't be throwing out. Nice to see you. Thanks so much. Coming up next on Fox 11 News in Depth, shopping smarter at the grocery store is what we're going to be talking about right after the break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fox 11 News in Depth. My next guest is not an expert on food, but she is a top financial advisor who knows how to save money, and most households spend a large part of their budget on groceries. Now, we know better not to throw out good food, but how about saving even more every time you go to the market? Winnie Sun is here. She's the founder of Sun Group Wealth Partners, and she's got some pretty good tips here on cutting costs. So, how am I gonna shrink my grocery bill, Winnie?
Al, you know, there's so many great tips. What I'm going to tell you, one of my favorite tips, of course, is to know how much you spend, create a budget, and, you know, use different techniques. Like my favorite tip right now, Al, is curbside pickup. That's the one.
So let's say I budget $100 a week for food at the grocery store. Listen, just a round number. How do I make that 75?
But I love that. Well, what you want to do is, first off, if you're looking at your $100 grocery bill, take a look at what you're spending on and do a deep dive. If, you know, like I have three kids downstairs, we go through that and we say, what is a want and what's a need? And find out ways of things that we absolutely all love to eat that we want to continue, or other ways that we can save if something's on sale. Maybe we get creative with the menu that week. But my favorite thing to do is to do curbside pickup. And the reason why I love that is because you're doing your grocery shopping while in the comfort of your own home. This gives you a chance to cross-reference your refrigerator, your pantry, to see what is it that you really need and what do you not need to buy right now. And then once you do that, you don't do impulse shopping, because impulse shopping, once you grow in the store, can really actually create 20 to 30% sometimes of a premium of overspend on your grocery bill.
Yeah, so when it comes to grocery shopping, my name is Hal Impulse Buyer Eisner. And if you put me down the aisle of a place and I need to get macaroni and cheese, I guarantee I'm going to grab some spaghetti. I'm going to get some pasta sauce just because it's there. And that's what you're talking about, is if you stay away from the aisles and get what you need and then have it brought to your car, that may be a better way to keep the budget in line. What about these programs that all these grocery stores have with regard to discounts? And you punch in your phone number and then your money comes down. Is that truly effective, or is it your sense that sometimes the prices maybe are a little higher, so when they bring them down, and pardon me, it's a skeptic in me, but they bring them down so it feels like you're getting a good discount?
Well, Hal, that's so true. You know, obviously they have different techniques to do that, but this is one technique that obviously you want to do while you're at the comfort of your own home in front of the computer. So this gives you a chance to cross-reference the items that you want to buy, and maybe you keep track of how much did I pay for, you know, romaine lettuce last week, and how much did I pay for that can of tomato sauce. That way you get to get a good sense as if that discount really makes sense. But signing up for the loyalty program at the supermarket makes a lot of sense. But you want to go beyond that. You want to look for other ways to save. For example, I love using a website called cashbackmonitor.com. This is a great one too. This will also show you how you can maybe get a little bit more cash back on your savings on top of the loyalty program through that grocery store. So apps, website, you know, try to stack your savings.
Well, just another thing is buying in bulk. So let's say you're a cereal eater, you like a certain brand, and that's the only thing you're going to have when you wake up every single morning. You probably buy that in bulk so you save money. Is that sort of a good idea?
It's a great idea. And a lot of people ask that. I mean, some of my clients will say, well, you know, we have a small family. Do we really need to buy in bulk? Should we go to the Costco's and the Sam's Clubs? And the answer to that is it depends on what it is that you're buying in bulk of. Are you going to be able to utilize all that? And like you talked about earlier, your guest earlier, not wasting food that you don't need or nobody's going to eat. So those staples that, you know, let's say it's pasta, maybe it's, you know, certain canned beans, something that you know your family will consistently eat, and you're going to be able to have that spent or used up within, let's say, the next month or 2 months, then it does make sense to try and buy those things in bulk on sale, and sometimes even stack them with cashback promotional time periods. So think about those. What are those main staples? Those are the areas that you're looking to get the best bang for your buck on.
Winnie, I only have 30 seconds. Just give me a 10-second answer to what is a meal calendar?
Meal calendar is exactly that. Figure out what your family likes to eat, time in and time out, that 80% that stays consistent.
Okay, great. Winnie Sun, great ideas, great tips. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you again next time. And coming up on Fox 11 News in Depth, an inspirational Olympic champion is buying her mom a very, very special gift. We'll tell you why she's the apple of her mom's eye after the break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back. If you haven't already, please check out my podcast. It's called What the Hell. It's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts, or just go to whatthehellpodcast.com. Before we go, for this Olympic champion, the taste of victory is so sweet. Gold medal winning Olympic wrestler Tamira Mensah-Stock is planning to make her mom's dream come true by using the cash she won from the games to buy her a food truck. Mensah-Stock, who is the first black woman and second woman ever to claim a wrestling gold medal for the U.S., won $37,500. She told People magazine her mother had struggled since her father passed away, and now she has a chance to spread the joy of victory to her entire family. What a wonderful story. Thanks for joining us, everybody, for this week's Fox 11 News in Depth. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.